Are you thinking about starting your own cash practice? Maybe you've already started your own practice and you're starting to realize that there's a lot to learn when it comes to business. We can be great clinicians, but if we don't understand the business side of having our own practice, we're going to have a hard time being successful in business. Guys, I wrote a book for you and I took everything that I've learned over the last 5 years of running a successful cash practice here in Atlanta, and I put it in this book, and I gave you everything that you need to be able to start and scale that practice past yourself. That book is called Fuck Insurance, and if you don't like the title, the book is not for you. If you do like the title, it's the exact book that you need to be reading right now. I show you exactly how to start. I show you what's important when it comes to marketing, when it comes to sales, when it comes to operations, and what stage you're actually at in the business, you know, where you're at, what you need to focus on while you're there, and how to get to the next stage. I'm trying to set it up in a way where you can get some clarity in your business. And the book for now is 100% free. All you have to do is go to finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com and get your free copy of the book that I wrote specifically to help you be successful in business. The book is free. All you got to do is pay for it to get to your door so that I don't lose my shirt on giving everybody all these books and sending them around the world. And again, head to finsurancebook.com. Learn how to run a successful cash practice today. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Doc Danny here with Mr. Eve GG on the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, going live in the Facebook group, PT Entrepreneur Facebook group. If you're not in it, go check it out. We are committing to doing more of these in the group this year, and we are on our second one in January. So,
crushing
not it. Too bad. And I was out of town. I was in Colorado last week. Otherwise we probably would have done it. But, dude, speaking of that, before we get into our topic, holy crap, is it pretty out there? Like, it's insane, right? I mean, I know you've been out there before. This is my first time in the Rockies, you know, in like Beaver Creek, Keystone kind of area, Vail. But man, it's just like so incredible. It looks fake.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such a stark contrast to what I have in Charleston and obviously what you have in Atlanta. At least you guys have some hills, but
yeah, definitely you. It's flat. Yeah. It's like totally flat where you're at.
Yeah. It's like 80 degrees outside. I was at the beach yesterday. So, you know,
wow.
It's different. No, it's gorgeous. Just mountains and not much snow. Like, if anybody's in Deer Valley, apparently they've got record snow there. So yeah, I'm excited to go to CSM and go to Denver and do some snowboarding and see how your skills have developed. That'll be good.
Well, I can turn now.
That's good.
So that helps. But I think with the addition of speed and more variables, the falls are worse. That seems to be, yeah, I no kidding. I had a bruise on my right butt cheek. I think I still have a bruise in my right butt cheek. This is like well over a week later. I hit so hard on the last run that I did. I like slammed my head. And this is like right where, of course, it's like right where everybody is, where like the lifts are. So it's also like not cool. And, it's way more fun to turn than it is to just sort of like mini squat and just slide down the mountain looking down. So, No, I'm excited. And I guess it brings a good point too. We will be sort of at CSM. We are going to be in the area during CSM, which is in February in Denver. And we're actually going to have a little get together, a little happy hour, informal thing for people that want to talk shop a little bit about business and performance-based training. The mixture of the two, we'll be doing that Wednesday night. What's the location and time again, Eve? I forget the specifics.
I'll put it up in the Facebook group. The name is a little weird, so I don't know it off the top of my head, but we're basically going to be there for happy hour. So from like 5 to 9 PM, we've kind of rented a room out there, but I'll make sure and create a Facebook event, and put it up in the group. Sorry, I don't know it off the top of my head.
Yeah. And it was super fun. Like, you know, oftentimes we have this platform where, you know, yeah, we can interact a little bit in the group or via email or social media or whatever. But more often than not, especially when you do these podcasts, it's just a one-way channel, right? So like, you may completely disagree with what we have to say, and you're sort of yelling at us in the car, but we can't hear you. And so now you have an opportunity to come and do that face to face.
That's what you want. That'd be great. Nice little debate. I'll do that all day. That sounds
fun. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. And but really, more than anything, like, it's just cool for us to get a chance to connect with people in our, you know, community, in our profession, that are, you know, interested in or are in business for themselves, talking about the sort of entrepreneurial side of what we're able to do and using their skill set differently, you know, and use this hybrid skill set that we have in a really effective way to impact a lot of people positively, but also, you know, to not have to necessarily deal with all of the negatives associated with taking insurance directly. So when we did it in DC last year, it was super fun. You know, we got a chance to talk shop with a good number of people that, you know, interact with our stuff, and some of the people that, you know, we've only interacted with social media, and we get to actually like shake someone's hand in person. But then we ended up eating like chili dogs really late, and that kind of, not normally what I eat or stay up till midnight. I usually don't do that or eat a chili dog at midnight. But Mike Yassin, thanks for the thanks for taking us to, what was that, Ben's chili pot or something like that?
Yeah, I opted out. You did not opt out, and you regretted it. So.
Oh, you were. I thought you were there. You just didn't eat a hot dog.
I just need a hot dog. Yeah, I was like, really, I'm eating one of these at whatever midnight, or probably wasn't that late because I'm old, but it was.
When
late.
In Rome.
Yeah.
That's what I said to myself. When in Rome. So well, okay. Let's get into the topic of the day. Do you want to pull up the question that we're gonna go over? Do you have the actual like context for this of the question and answer yet?
Yeah, for sure. So it was just a recent question. We get a lot of good questions, obviously, in the Facebook group. Very thought provoking, and I think I love the idea of highlighting some of the questions and digging deeper. So Travis asked in the group, and I'm gonna do this word from word. Looking to see what's legal. Locally, a hospital just bought a huge ortho practice. The docs used to give paper referrals, and the patient was in charge of scheduling with their PT or another provider like me. Now, they aren't getting a paper referral and getting a call from the hospital's PT department to set up the appointment. My question, while ethically sketchy in terms of autonomy, is there anything illegal about this? So, a lot of layers to this question, right?
Well, I think the real, first of all, neither of us are healthcare attorneys. So take this with that in mind. But this is something that we're starting to see and have seen, not just recently, but really over the last at least 10 years, where there's a strong consolidation that's occurring of market share for medical services. And a lot of this is driven by people that have much, much more money than you, me, or Travis combined times a lot. And these organizations typically are backed by private equity money, which is basically very wealthy individuals, hedge funds that pool money together to then buy businesses instead of, like, you might buy a share of Apple stock. They buy an orthopedic practice. And they bolt it onto something that they might already own, because there's a profit center there they get to exploit. I have a patient of mine is actually, he does acquisitions for a big private equity firm, primarily in oncology and urology. And it's really interesting when I, you know, whenever I see him to hear what he's doing. He's like traveling around the country, looking for these practices that are sort of undervalued, poorly managed. They can get at a somewhat lower multiple than what they can then buy it for, optimize it, and then turn around and sell it to somebody else. It's sort of the entire game is, it's sort of like flipping a house, but you're doing it with a business and the stakes are much higher. The potential money being made is much higher. Or in some cases, the rehab services, many groups will look at them as a hedge to economic downturns, because in an economic downturn, there's a lot of people utilizing government services still, Medicare, more people claim work comp, so that doesn't go away. People still have injuries whenever the economy isn't doing quite as well. So there's a lot of reasons why they would want to do this. All of that being said, is there anything you can really do about it directly? No. And the faster you can come to grips with that and be okay with that, the faster you can move on to do something that actually can help you safeguard your practice and improve your skill set. Does that sound about how you describe it, Eve?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I Charleston literally has gone through this exact thing, right? So we have a big healthcare hospital system, and we used to have a lot of private practices, and basically a bigger practice, like, and there's some huge, like, I think it's US Physical Therapy. It's a publicly traded company. And all they do is they go around, they buy practices, they literally flip them, they optimize them, and they either bring them into their market or they resell them, like you said. So this big company, I'm just not gonna name any names because I don't need to, came and just bought a bunch of private practices. And this exact same thing is happening, right? They bought all the physicians, they bought all the physical therapy practices, and they're keeping everything in house. And it makes it very, very difficult for other private practices to be successful, or at least be successful in the model that we've been taught in school, which is go market to the doctor sends you referrals, and you know, hopefully you have a couple doctors that send to you, and now I have an okay business. That's becoming a lot more difficult and a lot less common. And let's be honest, as business people, like what they're doing, you know, everything else aside, like is smart. Like let's,
super smart.
I'm just going to call them directly. So at the same time, it's going to be, and I'm such a big person of ownership. Like it's just take ownership, like you said, of this situation. And what can I do to create value in the marketplace so I can start to get people? And that's some of the stuff that we're doing, this direct marketing. You know, we have some sort of direct access in every state. Like the availability is there, and that's the cool part.
Yeah. So if you look at this through the lens of business, and let's just say you could change roles with somebody in that setting. Now you could say to yourself, well, it's not fair. Like you're bullying people. You're not allowing me to get people from this hospital to see me, right? Maybe not directly, but the patient can still decide wherever they want to go. What they're doing is essentially not giving them the option up front, but they're not saying you have to come see me. They're just not saying that hey, you can go anywhere you want. So if you were in their shoes and your goal of these businesses is to make as much money as possible and have as best return on investment for the people that are putting their money into that, you would do the same thing. So like you said, I think that first of all, you have to realize that you can't change the rules that are there now, right? So like the situation you find yourself in, you can do one of two things. You can get angry. You can decide to, you know, whatever, just position these people, this hospital, this option within the economy as wrong and bad, and you can be a martyr, and you can take that approach, which in my opinion, I think is going to get you nowhere. You're just going to be unhappy and frustrated, and your business is still going to suck. Or you can take, and a lot of this for me, trust me, shit, 5-6 years ago, I would have been very upset about this as well. And things like this have happened to us. And it's not that we get a lot of direct referrals, but we've had plenty of referral partners that in particular bring on in-house providers where we might be seeing, you know, 2 to 4 patients per month from each of these, and then boom, all of a sudden gone, referral source gone, because where do you think they're going to send people? In-house. So it is what it is, but, and I think we reference this book all the time, but Ryan Holiday, who's one of my favorite authors, I'm rereading this book, The Obstacle is the Way. I'm a really slow reader, and it's a very small book, but I'm rereading it for the third time. And, you know, Travis, if, not that I'm directly talking to you, but I guess we're kind of directly answering your question. I would recommend that you go get this book, The Obstacle is the Way, and you view this, what is perceived as a negative, you not getting this sort of low-hanging fruit of patients coming your way, and view this as an opportunity to really improve your skill set when it comes to marketing and sales, to where no matter how many people come in, no matter how many referral partners, potential referral streams change or gets consolidated, it doesn't matter, because you know how to position yourself in a way where you can regularly and repeatedly drive business to your business, no matter what the economy is, no matter what the landscape looks like, because you have inherent skill that you've learned. It doesn't sound like you know how to do yet. So it's the perfect time to do that, to reframe the way you look at this and ask yourself, well, what do I need to know so this doesn't affect me anymore, or it won't affect me in the future? So the obstacle, this referral system going away, well, that's the way. You have to figure out how to not necessarily be dependent on them anymore, and learn that skill set for yourself.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, think about it. We've been fighting for autonomy in the healthcare space. And if we continue to market in this old way of marketing to a doctor, the doctor refers to us, that autonomy is not going to mean anything. So if you want to view it from this viewpoint, finally, we're going to be forced to market directly and see the kind of patients that we want to see. Like, the icing on the cake, I think, is you're not, those patients, at least in our practice, I'm sure in yours too, typically who are going to a hospital and getting referred by a doctor are really not our ideal client. I never said
that. Not at all.
They're usually people who don't even want to go to the doctor. They come seek us out because the, you know, the typical healthcare system is just not what they need. So at the same time, cool, those people are getting what they need, which is a service that the hospital can provide. But for all these other people, right, we're going to go back to abundance mentality. All these other people, they're going to be the perfect fit for me. So finally, I can go out there and find those people. Yeah, I mean, that's what you're saying. Just taking a different perspective on things is huge for any part of your business when you're going through a struggle.
And to I guess, break this down into some action steps, because if this has happened to you, or maybe you're just at a point where, you know, you're somewhat just struggling for new patient volume anyway, what you really have to do is, A, start out by defining who your ideal customer is. So really get very granular about who that is. And to Eve's point, it's probably not the person that's going to a hospital clinic that's just looking for the whatever solution that there is presented to them from the physician. You know, what we really have found is informed consumers are the ones that are our favorite people to work with. They're the most likely to then refer more people our way that we want to work with, because their friends are like them and they want their friends to not go through the same, you know, situation. And sometimes even still, like, let's say somebody like that happens to just go with what their physician says. They know they're in the wrong spot almost immediately. They start looking for other solutions. And then when they find somebody like us, they know what they found and they never want to go anywhere else. So it can turn out to be a really, really good thing. Even so, if somebody is actually, you know, coming to see you, decides not to do that because of insurance purposes, then they go somewhere else, realize this isn't the place for me, and then they come back. That's been some of our favorite patients we've ever worked with, best long-term clients from that. So once you get really clear on who those people are, then you have to decide, well, where are those people located? So how can I either physically get in front of them or digitally get in front of them to start to create a relationship? And a lot of that comes down from what are you providing to them to build trust to begin with? Because if you don't start that relationship that way, what makes you think that they're going to want to work with you? You know, how are you any different than anybody else? So as soon as you can then establish trust, then you can get them in your ecosystem, provide a world-class service, which, you know, we assume people are doing, but let's be honest, most people, even in this forum, even listening to this podcast, have a massive amount of change that needs to be made in how they treat people, how they interact with people, how they follow up with people. You know, the long-term patient experience and the things that will do for your business are tremendous, but it's hard. And it's you can't just automate it. You can't be lazy about it. So if you decide you want to go the route of not really caring what hospitals pop up near you or what clinics are getting consolidated, you have to also put in the work on the back end to develop something that's going to be essentially resistant to those changes, because you have such a strong business to back it, and you know how to find the right people, get in front of them, educate them, build trust with them, and then fulfill on the promise that you make to them. If you do that, it won't matter how many people, how many hospitals get consolidated. Even if there's free healthcare, it won't matter, because you're still going to be light years ahead of so many other people. And that's always going to appeal to people that are informed consumers, time sensitive, and that are looking for more than average, which is, we don't want to play in the arena of an average clinic.
Yeah, it becomes your, and I made this mindset adjustment probably like a year, maybe a year and a half into, where I realized that that was actually our superpower, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we have the ability to be nimble. We have the ability to ingrain ourselves in communities. we have the time, the energy to give the most amazing experience that you just could not get at a hospital, or at least very, very, very unlikely, right? So using that and saying, okay, well, I can't do this version, but what else can I do that literally, you know, the big guy can't do? I can be much more nimble. I can, you know, provide, we're starting to provide these like swag bags now for when people come in.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get that at a hospital. You're getting like a little cloth like bag. You're getting a free like lacrosse ball, and you're getting like a pain science education kind of folder. Like, it's just, I continue to think, what can I do that, you know, my competitor can't do? And if you continue to position yourself like that, like I said, it becomes a superpower, and then the acceleration is amazing.
Dude, how much do people like those little bags, by the way?
It's amazing.
They love them.
Yeah, they just want to show our people. It looks just like a little mini cloth bag. You think it was super expensive. They come down to like, it's either $1 or maybe $2 per bag, right? And it's just like those little things that provide delight, right? Just something that small can go such a long way. You know what I mean? It's like, we talk about this stuff all the time, but like providing warm chocolate chip cookies, whatever hotel does that, like not very.
They did that at the mountain I was snowboarding at. So in Beaver Creek at 3:30, these people in like white coats and bakery hat, like baker hats come out, and it is like, you know, flies onto whatever. Like it is crazy how people just go after these folks. I didn't know what was going on. And I was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, is that a tray of chocolate chip cookies? You know, and then of course I'm like pushing kids down to get over there. But it's a little thing like that. Like that's such a memorable moment, you know? It's we do something very similar, and it's, you and I had this conversation. Ours is a little different, right? So we have a little bag, and they get a water bottle, and they get a t-shirt. And then we put in there, and this is, feel free to steal this, by the way, because I think we've gotten so many positive comments on this. We put a postcard that we made with, on one side, because we talked to everybody about better hydration and sleep. We think that's like two things that are super low hanging fruit that can make people feel better and just health wise make a big difference. So on one side, we put a recipe for a hydration drink that we like to give people. On the other side, we put 5 sleep tips that are super tactical, very low hanging fruit. We put it in there with their little water bottle, their t-shirt, and then I think they get something else, and they get this bag that sort of is branded to us. They walk out and they love it. People, they drink out of this water bottle if they come. It's like a uniform, the water bottle, the shirt, you know, they're like making their little hydration drink. They've got blackout shades. And a lot of it is just like, it just helps us get a better outcome. And it's not that costly, but it does take a lot of intentional thought and planning and really just like giving a crap about like what someone else thinks about your business. And what I've seen in these bigger businesses is they just don't really care. You know, they're very profitable, especially if they're owned by a private equity firm. They would prefer just to churn new people in and out of there. They know that's part of their business plan. They don't really care. As long as they can acquire market share, they can maintain profitability, and they can get bigger, they can sell it for more money. And what we get to do is say, okay, we want to be smaller. And this idea of sort of like boutique approach, customization, you know, we spend more time with people. We talk to people, you know, we follow up with them really fast. And there's always going to be a certain pool of people that wants this, you know, super cheap hospital experience. And there's always going to be people that want more of a personalized approach. And you just have to decide what game do you want to play? I think we chose the one we want because it's the one that resonates with us. But maybe you have the ability to acquire a clinic and roll it into a hospital and sell it for millions of dollars. Maybe that's you. It's not us. So that's the only really two options that we see. And what I feel really bad for is small, privately owned, in-network practices.
Mm-hmm.
And even like we have, we won't name his practice or anything, but we have someone in our mastermind that has a small, privately owned in-network practice. And he came to work with us because he realized there really was no other alternative to stabilize his business, because he didn't want to play this super high volume game than to stack on higher value cash services to stabilize his revenue. And it's been really interesting to watch what's happened with his business, even in the last 6 months. And I know that's like your favorite person that you're like, I can't wait to get one of these because I'm going to, what do you call it, like your white whale?
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. Like that's Moby Dick, right? I may have with that. It's just because it's super interesting to give somebody like that who feels stuck, right? You're into that business. It's very hard. Like I started totally over. That's one option. But to transition out and to do it successfully is so hard. And he is crushing it. And it just it opens a window to so many other practices. Like, I can't do this. I've been relying on doctors. Reimbursement's going down. Paperwork's getting more lofty. What do I do? I could start over, or can I transition out? And if we can make that possible for people, like, I just get so excited. One thing I had to say that I just came to this interesting realization. Picture 10 years ago, beer, right? Like Budweiser, Bud Light, Michelob Ultra. What do you see now with beer when you go to grocery stores? You see all
these microbreweries.
Microbreweries. So we are the microbreweries of the physical therapy healthcare world. So I want to I wonder what the market share is. It'd be really interesting what the market share was 10 years ago for craft breweries and what it is now. Like, it has to be astronomically different. And I love the idea of two options. Like, I don't want everyone to say that this hospital is doing it wrong or this private play insurance based clinics. It's just which option do you want? And there's enough market share to go around.
Well, one book that I read a few years ago that just I've listened to a lot of books, simply that Audible, a lot of books. But this one I actually did read, and there's very few that I'm like, damn, this dramatically changes the way I look at business. And it's called Small Giants. I think it's Bo Burlingham or something like that, Burlington. Anyway, it's about highlighting the idea of, instead of just trying to be big and get as big as possible, which I think for a lot of people, they think that's the only option within business. It's about how do you commit to being the best at something? It doesn't necessarily mean growing the biggest. And they actually highlight Anchor Steam Brewing in San Francisco in this book, which has turned down being purchased by other breweries numerous times. And, for them, they are very adamant about their culture, about their people, about what their lifestyle looks like, about what their work experience looks like, about the quality of their product. And I think that is a noble direction to take. That's what we've decided to do. And much of this has to do with just the way that you view business and the end result of what you're trying to do. And I would say when I first started, I thought, all right, I just got to be as big as possible. If you're not growing, you're dying. It's just this, you hear this all the time. But at what point is enough enough, right? And what also motivates you? Is it just purely revenue, or is it impact? Is it mastery of something? You know, is it culture of people that you really care about, and them being able to have really amazing opportunities and love what they do for a living? And that doesn't require, you know, millions and millions of dollars. It just doesn't. And I don't really think that, you know, more money without a passion for what you do, I think it puts you in a place where you're still going to be pretty miserable.
Yeah. I mean, man, there's so many things I want to piggyback off of there, but I agree. Like, if you're not growing, you're dying is true, but growth doesn't always mean revenue, right? Doesn't always mean volume, doesn't mean more patients, more PTs, bigger clinic. Like, I love the idea that growth is mastery of something. Growth is providing a better patient experience. Growth is having the best company culture and providing a place where physical therapists can thrive and like really enjoy the culture of what they're doing, like whatever that means, right? So it's such a good point, right? Like, we just need to be growing, but grow in a way that is passionate and specific to what, you know, this goes back to, I just posted this in the mastermind group. Like, we did a goal setting course and people put in their whys, and just seeing some of the people's whys, like the passion they had for the physical therapy profession, the passion they had of wanting to provide a better life for their kids and for their family, and really driving home that why. And that is where the passion and the power is coming from. It's just so cool to see. So when you can align your job and your passion and your why, like, man, you're ready for a life full of happiness. Let's be honest.
And I think it's a tough conclusion to come to. I mean, that the goal setting course we have is like pretty robust, and it's not just how much revenue do you want to make next year, you know? And I think that's what makes it so challenging for people to go through, right? And, you know, I mean, when we went through this live with Jared, you know, he broke down what sort of his one thing is, his why, right? And it had nothing to do with revenue, had nothing to do with money. You know, it had a lot to do with relationship with his family and impact on people around him. And, you know, and even for me, I, as we've gone through this and I've gone through similar exercises, like I've gotten really clear on the fact that, like, I care so much more about, like impact generationally in my family. Like for me, my goal is generations from now, people look back and they're like, great grandpa Danny was a G. Like that guy set us up in a way that we're thankful for. Which is something that is very far off in the distance. But that doesn't necessarily mean money either. That could be an aspect of it, but it's also family culture. It's the way that we interact with each other, the way that we teach people how to work or interact with other people, and what we give back to people outside of our business, our family, in establishing, we talk about culture in a business, but it's culture in your family. And that comes from leadership and comes from what you do, not just what you say. So, you know, for me, that's big. So decisions that we make are based off of what allows us to spend more meaningful time with our friends and family. And after a certain amount of revenue, it's negligible. It doesn't really affect us one way or another. And that puts you in a really amazing place where you get to say, you know, no, thank you. I'm not interested in doing this because it takes me away from my core values, which are driving me towards these decisions that I make. But to get to that point, I think it's so hard. It's really, really difficult. And you also have to be very honest with yourself. And sometimes people are not willing to do that. It is a scary thing to do. So, you know, if you're looking at like what direction to take in your business, I think that what you really need to say is, well, what do you want your life to look like first? And then what does your business need to look like to support that, to let you be happy and enjoy the things you want in life, versus how big can I get this thing? Because there's no additional zero in your bank account that'll make you happy. You know, I asked this question the other day to one of our mastermind members we were talking to, and we were talking about money, and I was just kind of making the point that it's not that important. I was like, what if a 90-year-old man came up to you and told you, I'll give you $100 million right now if you switch places with me. Would you take that?
No.
No freaking chance. I don't want to be a 90-year-old man with $100 million. I like where I'm at. I want to enjoy my time. Like I got a long time till then. So money's not everything. It's a component, but so is your health. So is your relationships. You know, so is your interaction with people around you and your sense of purpose. So, you know, I'm not even sure how I got on this topic at this point, but the goal setting stuff and getting clear on what you want and what really drives that is the number one step you have to take, because you probably are going to find out that more money is not necessarily the most important thing to you. It might be a byproduct of what you need to do because you're in a lot of debt and you're in a tough place and it's very stressful. But as you get out of that and you start to be able to chip away at that, systematically eradicate that and put yourself in a solid financial place, the way you view the world is very different.
Yeah. I mean, we got to this kind of like via perception, right? Like you can perceive things one way, but you need to consistently, and mindset has shifted for me and for you. And I know for Jared as well, for all of us, and it constantly kind of evolves. Right. And so to put this out there, right? We all started somewhere, and it's a constant evolving process of like trying to look at obstacles as opportunities. You know what I mean? Providing a more of a growth mindset, getting in the mindset of more financial and time freedom than just trying to pay your bills. I mean, it's all a constant, evolving process. It's just the bottom line.
Yeah, but that's part of the fun. I mean, that.
I would agree.
I don't know if there's ever a place where you can say like, I've got it figured out. I'm good. And this applies to our profession clinically. But this also applies to us in general. And I just think the people that I am just kind of most interested in, and I gravitate towards, are the ones that are constantly questioning things not in a bad way, but themselves, their beliefs. They're getting exposed to other people that question their views on things. And they're trying to improve, and they're open to improving on a daily basis. And they never are perfect. They never get to the point where they are, 100% at anything they're trying to get better at. There's always room for improvement. And if you take that approach, just like our friend that's struggling with this hospital that's not sending referrals his way, embrace it. Awesome. Good. Just like Jocko Willink. Good. Just say good after everything bad that happens.
Yep.
Hospital's not sending you visits anymore. Good. Time to become great at sales and marketing. That's probably the best way to look at it. And if you can take that approach, I think it doesn't really matter, what it is that ends up happening with your business, because you're always going to be able to take ownership in it and figure out what to do to move yourself in the right direction so that you can solidify your business for safety and prosperity for long periods of time, and provide for your family for long periods of time, instead of being dependent on essentially a handout from somebody else that they can take away at any time.
Yeah, it's a very freeing mindset. It's just the bottom line. And it takes a long time to foster. Like, let's both be honest. We definitely would get frustrated if a referral source stops coming. I get angry. Like, of course I get angry. I don't just like, oh good, this is great. Like, of course I have this moment, but then I kind of reel it back in, gain some clarity, and realize, oh man, this is an opportunity. Right. And so, it's just how you handle those types of things.
Well, right? Even if you do get angry, this is what I always think about. Cause I get angry. Like, there's no doubt about it. One of my biggest flaws that I have to work on is I have a temper when it comes to many things. Not like beating my kids up, but I've been like this my whole life. And our family is, my dad's Italian, and they're like, oh, it's the Italian blood, they run hot, whatever. Yeah. Right? It's like, no, it's a lack of self-control is what it is. It's a pure lack of self-control, period. So being able to work on that is important. You can't just say, oh, I'm Italian, I can lose my temper on people. But what you can think, and I find motivation in the concept of success is the greatest revenge. Like, sometimes I almost fabricate that people think I can't do something because it makes me like more motivated to do better. I said something to Ashley the other day. I was like, yeah, I just don't think people think that we're capable of doing this, that. She's like, I don't think anybody thinks that. I think you think that. And I was like, I think I need to think that for me to work as hard as I need to in order to achieve an outcome. So if you're mad, okay, then be mad, but also understand that success is the greatest revenge. So if you can take this obstacle, overcome it, and become successful, you win. There's nothing else anybody can say about that. And in business, what's nice about this is there's a clear scoreboard in terms of where you're at. If you're still in business, you're in the game. This is this idea of like, there's really no end. The goal is to stay alive for as long as you can. Like, what is winning? What does that mean? In business, what does it mean? I have no idea. Like, is it revenue? Is it employees? Is it happiness? Is it impact? Is it contribution to charity? I don't know. There's no defined rules. It's a open game theory. It's not closed. And with that, the only goal is to stick around, to not go out of business. So sometimes these decisions you make when you try to get really big are the first step to you putting yourself out of business, because you overleverage yourself and you don't actually have solid foundation for where you're at. So keep that in mind as well. So if you're angry, be angry, but remember, success is the greatest revenge.
Love it. I think we end on that note. Mic drop right there.
Jared's going to get his good tattoo, and I'm going to get success is the greatest revenge.
I like those.
Just stay angry if that's what you want to do. Anyway. All right. Cool, guys. Like we said, if you want to meet up in person and you're in Denver, let's do it. Keep an eye on the Facebook group. We're going to put the specifics about where we're going to be on that Wednesday of CSM. We will be hosting a little happy hour, so we can chat, we can meet in person and talk shop a little bit about what you're doing, what we're doing, and hopefully have some cool conversations and meet some interesting people. It was fun. We met a bunch of students last time. That was probably the best part, just like to see how much further along these students were than when we were in school. It's like people are down on the profession, but man, you spend some time with some of these real, I mean, very smart students and you're thinking, we're in great hands. Like, what's everybody upset about? It's awesome. Yeah.
We got some badasses coming up. I would completely agree. We meet some amazing people who are going to be, they're going to impact the profession. Like, I'm very excited about what's to come. You know what I mean? Obviously more students are looking at the kind of stuff that we're doing than ever. And I think the opportunity is there.
Agreed. So if you're there, come and hang out. If not, no big deal. We will not be attending the conference because it's not a waste of time, but it's not really the right place for us to spend our time right now. Because we're a little bit more focused on running our business and a little bit less on what current research says. So, which is important for the profession, but not necessary for us. So learned our lesson last year. We went to one, one presentation and then nothing else.
The presentation was good, but yes, I agree. The networking and all that stuff seemed to be much more fruitful for us at this time.
Agreed, for sure. Yeah. So as always, guys, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you're in the Facebook group, you watch this live, you watch the video, thanks for that as well. We're going to try to do more of these. And if you keep asking questions, we'll keep doing podcasts to answer them. So Travis, thank you so much for your honesty and for your question. I hope this helps. So guys, as always, we'll catch you next time. You want more cash PT biz help? If so, go get a copy of my book, Fuck Insurance. It's your playbook to successful performance PT practice and never having to deal with insurance again. You can get a free copy at finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com. Inside this book, you'll learn the direct techniques that we have used to become one of the fastest 100% cash PT practices in the country.